Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to be talking about Digicam, photo management software that goes from soup to nuts. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch, episode 345, recorded July 15th, 2015, Digicam. This episode is brought to you by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Synergy.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not being aware of it, projects you may want to go download immediately after the show and go play with. There's all sorts of projects to be here on Floss Weekly, and each week I am joined by a wonderful and talented co-host. This week is no exception, Dan Lynch. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back. It's always good to be here.
Very good. And where are you speaking to us from? The normal place, I presume?
Yes, I'm in my what you termed my secret underground bunker. Although I live on the second floor, so it's not really underground. But never mind. My secret bunker in Liverpool in the UK. Yeah,
your secret above ground bunker.
Yes, bunker. My secret second floor bunker. Yes. Maybe
not so secret anyway. Well, I'm speaking to you from Silicon Rainforest. Although this is the opposite of rain these days, it's been running sometimes as high as 90, which I guess is what 42 for you or something. That's some big number for people who don't speak Fahrenheit.
Hot,
but it's absolutely warm. And unfortunately, the apartment that I live in has air conditioning, but it's one of these little in-wall units that's way at the other end of the entire apartment. So I get no benefit from that. And I think I nearly had a heat stroke yesterday. It was just really insanely warm here. So I am looking forward to getting out of here to go find someplace that has air conditioning. So, but that has to be after we get this show done. Okay. So now we've done the this week and where we are. Let's talk about what today's project is. Today's project is Digicam. Digicam is a photo management system to keep track of all your photos and organize them and tag them and process them and do all sorts of really wonderful things like that. I understand you have some experience with Digicam, right, Dan?
Yeah. I've used it many. I used it many years ago, actually. Obviously, it's a KDE program on Linux. I'm not really a KDE guy, but you can install it on GNOME and other things, which I'm sure Dimitri will tell us about. But yeah, I used it quite a bit years ago to manage photos. But in preparation for this show, I reinstalled it last night. Actually, for all the geeks out there, I typed sudo apt-get install digicam on my Linux desktop, and it worked, and it installed, and it didn't pull down hundreds of KDE libraries as well, which was refreshing. But yeah, I've had a little play around with it again to refresh my memory. It's basically, yeah, it's like you say, it's photo management, photo editing included as well. It does lots of cool things, but I'll leave Dimitri to tell us some of those.
Yeah, and since we've mentioned his name three or four times without mentioning his whole name, Dmitry Popov is joining us in just a few minutes. But before that, I have a very important message that I'd like to read to you right now. Whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean provides developers with droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. I'm personally a DigitalOcean subscriber even before we started having them on Floss Weekly because I heard about them at Scale back in February. They're really, really smart and very cheap, too. I don't know how they do it so cheaply. They must do it with Scale. Just use that word twice. DigitalOcean is built for developers and used by over 400,000 of them, including me. You can deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. And you can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Debian, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. My box is actually a FreeBSD box because that's the one I'm most familiar with out of that list. And the servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigs of RAM, and 640 gigs of SSD hard drive space. As far as I can tell, all their hard drives are actually SSD. That makes them lightning fast. Auto backups and snapshots that you easily clone, deploy, and resize droplets as you grow. Full-featured DNS management to easily manage your domains or use dedicated IPs. And an extremely active community with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplet. Want to deploy Docker? Set up a mail server? They've got you covered. DigitalOcean has incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 a month. There's also hourly pricing available starting at less than a penny per hour. We're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com and create an account. Once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS for a free $10 credit. That's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. We thank DigitalOcean for their sponsorship of Floss Weekly. And now let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Dimitri. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Randall. Hello, Dan. It's nice to be here.
Very cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking from Aarhus in Denmark. It's the second largest city. We have plenty of wind, not so much sun, and a bit of rain every now and then.
Cool. And so I gave what I thought DigiCam was about. Can you give us a 30,000-foot view and tell us what problems DigiCam is actually solving?
Yeah, well, you're actually right. DigiCam is basically a desktop, open-source desktop photo management software. And it's designed to deal with pretty much every photo-related task you throw on it, from importing photos from your digital camera, renaming them, processing raw files, organizing your photos in albums, tagging them, and finally either printing them if you're into these kind of things or pushing them to photo-sharing websites like Flickr, Yandex Fotki, and SmugMug, and so on. So basically, DigiCam is a software that does everything right after you press the shutter release.
And it's that's important to have something that's really streamlined for that. I know I take a ton of pictures. In fact, I've got a ton of pictures that I haven't ingested completely yet. So I'm way behind. I've got about six cruises I haven't finished yet. And I keep looking at my to-do list that says, time to go work on this cruise that you had from February. And I went, oh, great. I've got to get some more pictures done. I've been using proprietary software for that. I've been using Aperture. I've been using Aperture for that. And my workflow is usually that I grab everything off of the camera. I then immediately go through and rate them all like 1 through 5, where 1 is like it's just completely pointless. Someone else will just get rid of it because it's out of focus or really redundant with something else I shot, you know, a tenth of a second later. And then that's usually where I stop. I don't do anything more after that. So at least they're sorted out. I presume DigiCam has that sort of a workflow, and then where do you take it from there?
Oh yeah. Well, DigiCam is a very flexible application and versatile application. So it depends a lot on your specific needs and or your specific way of working with raw files and photos. So you can sort of customize your workflow and use the features that are available in DigiCam. For example, I can speak from my own experience because I use DigiCam practically every day. I shoot a lot and I use DigiCam both to process photos and raw files. So there is also this system which you can use to quickly sort photos by quality. There are so-called PICS features, which you can use to assign flags to photos. For example, you can choose to flag photos you like and you would like to process immediately. Other photos, you can flag them with a flag that means that you would process them later. And you can use another flag to mark photos you would reject later. And then you can just either use the organizational module of DigiCam, part of DigiCam, to sort your photos by relevance, by tags, and so on. And you can use the editing module to edit photos. Actually, DigiCam, the editing module in DigiCam comes as a separate standalone application called Show Photo. So if you don't use, you don't want to use the organizational module of DigiCam, you can just simply opt to use the editor part. There are really a lot of features in DigiCam that you can use to keep tabs on your photos. For example, you can view your photos by geographical information. So if you, for example, have a lot of photos taken in Paris or in France or in Japan and so on, you can easily display and filter all the photos by location. So if you want to show your family photos from your latest trip, you can just use this feature to quickly narrow down your collection to a specific subset of photos. And there is a feature that allows you to view photos by date. So for example, if you want to see photos taken last May, for example, you can easily locate them and show them on the screen. So they're pretty much... There are really a lot of features in DigiCam, and everything depends on your approach to managing photos and editing them.
Mm. And that all sounds really cool. And I've used DigiCam a little bit, as I was saying, and I'm a fan of the GNOME desktop on the GNOME 3 at the moment on Linux, and it's a KDE app. DigiCam is the name kind of implies, but it works. It seems to work pretty well on other desktops. Is that something that you were keen on?
Yeah, actually, I used to run DigiCam on Kubuntu, but I recently switched to Ubuntu, and right now I'm running DigiCam on Ubuntu machine 15.04. Mm-hmm. So it runs perfectly well, no problems there. And the only thing that is missing from the DigiCam on Ubuntu is are the themes. Because mm-hmm. themes are tied to the KDE desktop, so you only have only one default theme.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I mentioned in the intro at the top of the show that I installed this last night. I did a sudo apt get install and pulled down the DigiCam package. I'm on Linux Mint, it's 17, but anyway, it's based off Ubuntu, so it gets it from the Ubuntu repository. And I was refreshed to see that I was slightly worried it was going to pull down like all of KDE 4 or something and take like 3 hours to download everything and install it. And it didn't. It was 44 megabytes or something it needed to pull down, which is nothing. So how does that work with like the dependencies and stuff? Do I have to have KDE installed as well, or how does it work with libraries and so on?
No, not necessarily. I think the way it works is just pulls the libraries. When you install DigiCam, it pulls only the libraries it needs. But there is one thing you have to keep in mind when installing via apt-get is that, as it's often the case, you will get the older version of DigiCam. I'm not sure which version is in Linux Mint. I'm in the official repositories. I mean, it's something like 4.08, maybe.
Yeah, I can look it up. I'm looking it up. Yeah. As you say. Go on, carry on, sorry.
And the current version is 4.11. Mm-hmm. So if you want to install the latest version on Ubuntu and its derivatives, the best thing is to use a dedicated PPA. There is a maintainer who releases and packages the latest releases of DigiCam almost instantly, almost on the day of the official release. So if you want to get the latest version, you would probably be better off using the PPA. Mm. I actually tried to install DigiCam on Linux Mint 17.2 through the PPA, and there was some unresolved dependencies, so it doesn't work really well. I wouldn't recommend it doing the PPA install on Linux Mint, at least not without reading up on the web whether there is a solution to this problem.
Yeah, and just in case anyone is interested, I've just looked in my package manager to see what version I've got on the laptop here, and it's 4.4. It looks like 4:4.0.0 Ubuntu 14.4 version. So it probably is slightly out of date. That's something you'd have with these repositories. So you mentioned about the whole modularity of the project and so on, and using the editor, or just using the editor, or not using the editor. Mm. I was curious about linking into things like GIMP, for example, which is really popular on on Linux and even on other systems as well. I like to edit photos in GIMP because I like the power of it, and I suppose I've got used to it. Could I tie that in? Will it link in, or do I just edit my photos in GIMP and save them to the folder where Digicam's going to keep looking for them? Or is there some, you know, more integrated workflow there?
Well, actually, what you can do, Digicam has a context menu, and there is the command called open with. So you can do a round trip from Digicam. You can open a photo directly from Digicam in the GIMP, for example. Edit your photo and save it back, and Digicam will automatically recognize it. So you can do this round tripping with pretty much any photo editing application.
Excellent, excellent. And does it work on other platforms as well, I'm thinking? Because with it being KDE, you can use a lot of that stuff on Windows and Mac to some degree.
Yeah, there are installers for Windows and for Mac OS X. The Windows installer is maintained by a third-party developer, I guess would be the correct term, while the OS port is maintained by the lead developer. And as far as I know, the latest version of Digicam is even released as a package, is installer package for Mac OS. So it should be a one-click affair to install the application on a Mac OS. And in the same is with Windows. It ships as an installer, so it's just a double click, and you install in Digicam on Windows. The only thing I'm not sure of, the last time I tried Digicam on Windows, and was a long time ago, it wasn't very stable, so I would hesitate a bit in recommending using Digicam as a production use on the Windows platform. Maybe things have changed, I don't know, but do some research before committing to using Digicam as your preferred photo management application on Windows.
Mm. You know, you actually mentioned just a second ago, and I'm pretty excited by that it does have an OS X port. I'm really disappointed in the fact that Apple is killing Aperture because I have all this stuff all coded into it, all of my ratings, and everything like that. I wonder, are there standard formats for that kind of meta information? And do you think I might be able to get that into Digicam?
Well, Digicam, as any other professional application, supports the metadata standards like EXIF, IPTC, XMP, and so on, and a lot of other acronyms. So it works perfectly well with pretty much any metadata format, so that shouldn't be a problem.
Well, that's exciting then, because I may just go switch over to this, and then one more thing where I can finally say yes, I'm running open source software instead of all the proprietary stuff that people yell at me all the time. And speaking of workflow, I left out a step earlier, which is that I have a geologger. And I need to get that GPS data onto the EXIF information. Again, speaking of that, does Digicam support like standard tracks, like GPX or anything?
Absolutely. Actually, that was one of the features that won me over when I started using Digicam. I mean that Digicam was actually the first to implement geolocation and geotagging functionality even before it was available in Adobe Lightroom. And it's a very powerful feature. Yeah, it's a very powerful feature too, because you can assign, the interface consists of a map, and you can assign coordinates, geotags to your photo, just simply dropping it in them on the map. Or you can use geocorrelation. So if you have, for example, a GPX track file, you can correlate it to your photos. The only thing is that you have to make sure that your GPS tracking device and your camera times are synchronized, so there won't be any offset.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very careful before I do a photo shoot to actually, pull up, standard time and set it down to the second on my camera so that I know my GPX tracks are always good with that. Yeah. I have something like know, 40,000 pictures on Flickr, and they're all geotagged except a couple of them. And those I geotagged just so I could remember, because I don't remember where I took them. I geotagged them to 00, which is out there off the coast of Africa. So if you see my pictures out the coast of Africa, it's because I don't have the tag for it.
Well, actually, there is a little tip for you. I usually carry my Android smartphone with me. So when I'm out and about and shoot, I usually take what I call a reference picture with my Android phone because it's geotagged. And then when I get back home, I simply copy, I use Digicam to copy geographic coordinates from the reference photo and just apply them to all photos from my camera.
Wow. Wow. That's a little trick I hadn't used yet. That sounds really fun. I actually use my phone now as my geologger. I had been using standalone little fobs, but, you know, it's like I've got enough spare battery for my phone that even if I have to recharge it three times during the day, because it's an iPhone, it has to be recharged all the time. but I carry plenty of spare batteries. I carry enough to charge it like five times over on a typical day run. So now I just use, there's a application for iOS called MotionX GPS. And it's really good because I can download maps to it, and I can also do GPX tracks. And I found that it works really, really well. The exports are just great and everything. So I no longer have one more device to carry. I've just got my phone with me anyway. So no big deal about that. So good. This sounds exciting. So I can get rid of actually two proprietary things. I can get rid of the Huda Geo, which is right now what I'm doing to do my GPX correlation. So it sounds like I may be going full open source here coming up soon if we can get all the rest of these problems worked out. Another thing I was curious about, I don't know if you mentioned it because I've been sort of fuddling with some stuff back here and having a little trouble with my Skype connection here. Does this also have the capability of having, say, previews on a disk you're carrying around with you, but having the full-size raw images on something it can then access when it finally gets back home?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean.
Okay, so one of the things that Aperture can do that's actually pretty handy is you can have essentially offline volumes. And so that would be, say, on my Drobo or something, or network attached store, whatever you want to call this stuff. That's where the data stores. But you want to also then have the previews around so that you can kind of quickly go through and maybe pick out pictures so that when you finally get back to your office or your home or whatever, you can then do the processing on the actual pictures. Is that possible with Digicam? Does it work that way?
Yeah, if I understand your question correctly, yes, that's possible. Digicam can handle pretty much any type of storage, both external disks and internal hard disks. So, for example, if you can have your photo collection on a USB disk, and you can use Digicam to view and to edit and do all the stuff. Digicam uses two databases for keeping all the essential key data, one for metadata and internal stuff, and the other one for thumbnails. Okay. And basically, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't really import your photos. It just leaves them where they are and keep the essential information in a dedicated database. So you can use whatever storage thing you have and use Digicam to view and process your photos.
Okay. Let's talk about the editing for a second. Is there... can I apply filters and things to essentially copies of the pictures rather than applying it to the original?
Yeah. Digicam supports so-called versioning, meaning that every time you edit a photo, it saves a version of this photo. Or you can configure this feature. You can configure this feature any way you like it. But yeah, you can. It supports non-destructive editing, and you can save several versions of the file you are working on.
So that's something I was actually going to ask about, Dimitri, was the non-destructive editing thing, because I know. Let me be full disclosure here. Anybody who knows me knows I can't take a picture to save my life. I'm terrible at photography. So I'm maybe not the best person to discuss photo editing. But I know friends of mine who are really into this love the fact that things like Lightroom will do non-destructive editing. So, you know, I can make all these changes, and then 3 weeks later when I realize I've made a stupid mistake, I can just go back to the very start and do again or change things. So you can support that in Digicam as well?
Yeah, this feature is supported. And it's the versioning is enabled by default. So even if you know nothing about this feature, the first time you try to save your edit, you will be prompted to save it in a separate file. So the only lacking part here is that Digicam doesn't allow to save you all the edits as a sort of profile or preset. So, if, for example, if you want to adjust, let's say, brightness on several images, you have either go one by one, or you have to use the batch processing tool in Digicam.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned batch processing, because I was just about to say one of the big problems or the big kind of time-consuming tasks that a lot of people. Photographers suffer with is the processing of a big stack. You've just gone off and taken 500 photos or whatever it is, and you've got to process those. Obviously, doing it individually is an absolute nightmare. So, tell us a bit about the batch processing and how that works.
So, well, as the name suggests, batch processing is all about processing multiple photos in one go. And what it does is that you select the pictures you want to process. Let's say you have a bunch of JPEG files and you want to resize them, make them brighter, apply a watermark, and perform other actions. So that's what you do. You just add the photos to queue and then pick and choose the actions you want to perform, then configure every action, and then run the batch operation. And this will produce the other set of photos with all the actions applied to them. As I said, this is a very powerful tool, especially if you have hundreds of photos you need to apply the same actions over and over again. It could be a real time saver. The problem is that you can't save all these actions as a preset. So next time you have to, for example, you have to do the same actions on a different set of photos. You have to configure the batch operation from scratch.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, obviously, processing a lot of photos like that is quite an intensive task for the system as well. So I was curious about what kind of technology. Obviously, I know you're using KDE and Qt or Qt4, as I like to call it, as your toolkit and stuff. But what kind of languages do you use? Because I would imagine processing a lot of this stuff, it's going to be intensive. So has that thrown up any challenges for you?
Well, this is where the lead developer would be very, very handy to talk to. Unfortunately, he's stuck somewhere in France and couldn't be with us today. So I'm probably not the best person to answer this question, but let me say this, that if you add my email address to the show notes, I will surely investigate it and give you an answer.
Yeah, no problem. Sorry about that. I thought you had been involved in some of the low-level coding stuff. So,
not really, a
difficult question there. No problem. So we should talk a bit about the project and the history of it then. So how did you come to get involved with Digicam? Were you there at the beginning, or did you come in later, or how did that kind of work out?
I came in later. I started using Digicam around 2009, 2010. And at that point, I was just beginning my photography thing. So so I was looking for a good application to manage photos and to process them. And Digicam, I tried Shotwell, or was it? No, it was F Sport, I think it was the name. And it was pretty limited in its scope. So. I tried to find something better, so I stumbled upon Digicam, and I was really impressed by the feature set and the overall application. So I got in contact with the lead developer Gilles, and I was curious enough to investigate and dig deeper in the application and try to figure out all the advanced functionality. And I try to document it as much as possible. And I write about it on my blog. And I try to contribute to the official documentation. I also authored an ebook called Digicam Recipes, which covers a lot of ground and a lot of Digicam functionality. So I would consider myself a very happy, satisfied customer who is curious enough to research Digicam functionality and write about it.
So, I mean, how many people are involved in the project then? So there's yourself, there's obviously the lead developer. I imagine there's a fair few. Do you have any idea, like, how many people work on this?
Well, it's like with any open source project. There is a core developer group, and then there are people that come and go. I attended their coding sprint in Berlin. It was in November, if I remember correctly, and we were about 7-8 people, and that was the current core team of Digicam. Gilles Collier, he's the main coordinator and the lead developer of Digicam.
And you mentioned about briefly about the recipes there that you do for Digicam. Now, this is something I was looking at on your website, which is really interesting. You do these Digicam recipes. So tell us what the recipes are and a little bit more about them.
Well, recipes is just a fancy word for tricks and sort of short tutorials explaining how to use different features in Digicam. You see, usually when you have a book about an application, you have like this continuous explanation from A to Z of all the features. What I try to do is to give a very practical examples of how to use Digicam for specific purposes, like, for example, how to geotype photos or how to find your photos in the best possible way, how to process raw files, how to deal with color management, stuff like that. So in all this in relatively short and easy digestible chunks.
And I noticed that on the website there, you sell some of the recipes as well. And that leads me into the difficult question, I suppose, that nobody wants to ask, which is, do you get paid to work on Digicam, or is it a labor of love, or how does that work out?
This is a labor of love, and I donate 50% of all ebook sales to Digicam project, because I think it's a fair thing to do, and I would like to support Digicam in any way I can. I can't code, so I write about it, and I donate half of all the proceeds to the project.
And you mentioned that you donate to the project. So how is the project set up? Is it like a non-profit foundation? Is it a company? Or how does that work?
I think Digicam is part of this bigger KDE thing, and a non-profit thing. So I believe they're under the umbrella, under the KDE umbrella, non-profit. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, excellent. So that makes sense, actually. I should have probably guessed that from the fact that it's a KDE project, but there you go. That's very, very cool. So, I'm curious to know about, obviously, there are so many, I mean, as I've admitted, I'm not much of a photographer, but I do know there are a lot of different models of camera out there. They've all got different features. They have different ways of working. So does it matter what kind of camera you've got for support with Digicam, or will it support almost any kind of camera you might have?
Well, it would support pretty much any camera that shoots JPEG or PNG, TIFF, and so on. Mm-hmm. And it supports pretty much all RAW files. You can actually check whether your camera is supported. If you go to the help menu in Digicam, there is an item called supported cameras. And currently there are around more than 600 models supported by Digicam. And Digicam uses LibRAW library for processing RAW files. And LibRAW developers, they're pretty good at bringing or supporting all new cameras that appear on the market. For example, I recently bought Sony A3000, and it wasn't supported in Digicam 4.8, if I remember, but it was already supported in 4.11. So it took something like couple of weeks to add this support for this camera, specific camera.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wonder why there's so many different RAW formats out there. You'd think that that'd be something they could unify, but as I keep thinking about it, the RAW format generally takes each pixel, and so they're all going to be laid out different ways, and they have different orientations and different combinations for that. I am sort of surprised when I see aperture updates and it says, okay, now supports these five cameras or these four cameras, so that it just has to be a constant battle between the people creating software and the people that are creating cameras. I guess they're out there using it out in the parking lot or something. Yeah.
Yeah, there was an attempt to create a universal RAW file format called DNG. It was originally developed by Adobe.
Yeah,
but
I remember that.
It didn't really catch on. I mean, there are only few camera manufacturers that use this RAW format as their native format. Hasselblad and Leica, probably the two only companies or camera makers that support DNG.
Yeah. Okay. And so, where do you see Digicam going? What's it currently still missing? If there were developers out there that we could help with it, what kinds of things would you need from people? Do you have any sense of that? Since you're not more of a developer, but do you have any sense of that?
Yeah. Well, being a writer, I think that the most important or one of the most important things right now is documentation. The existing documentation is outdated, partly outdated, and there are still a lot of ground that is not covered by documentation. So if you are curious about Digicam and are willing to write about it, you're always welcome to contribute to documentation part of it. And of course, if you're a developer, you're always welcome to join the project. I know that Digicam is a regular at Google Summer of Code, so okay. They are doing mentoring. So if you're interested to do some development as a student for Digicam, you can go this way, apply for Google Summer of Code. And of course, if you have patches or new features and so on, you're welcome to contribute. And of course, as any user, you are more than welcome to submit bugs and feature requests.
And I presume this has all the usual support sort of style from open source projects of having maybe an IRC channel somewhere and having mailing lists and bug trackers, like you just said. Is this a GitHub project?
No, it's not on GitHub. KDE, they maintain their own infrastructure, and I believe Digicam is part of this infrastructure, so they host their code on KDE's infrastructure. Okay. It is Git, but it's not GitHub.
Okay, that's fine. And also, I had another question about workflow that occurred to me earlier. One of the things that Aperture is doing for me right now is it's also keeping track of the videos that I take on some of the trips. So I don't take a lot of videos anymore, but you know, sometimes my iPhone will grab a quick video, short thing. Can you put the videos alongside the photos and have it sort of manage that? And is there any sort of preview available for that?
Yeah, you can do that. I don't know exactly what video formats are supported, but everything that comes from my Android smartphone, for example, all videos, they are supported right out of the box. And, well, you can view them. And I believe that the latest version of Digicam adds support for metadata. So you can both read metadata from videos and write metadata to them.
This sounds awesome. I think I finally found my aperture replacement. We're sort of getting close to getting out of time here. Is there anything that we should have been asking you all along that we haven't yet?
There is one thing that occurred to me. I think it may be important to mention is that Digicam, a lot of Digicam functionality is implemented via so-called KIPI plugins. KIPI stands for KDE Image Plugin Interface. So it was an attempt to sort of modularize Digicam's architecture. So there are a lot of features that can be enabled and disabled individually in Digicam. For example, all sharing functionality, all sharing services are supported via Kipi plugins. So if you, for example, you don't use some exotic services, you can just turn them off and you can just enable just the right amount of features you want.
So, Dimitri, I noticed when I was looking up some of your stuff on the web and stuff, you're a journalist as well. You write for Linux Magazine and Raspberry Pi publications, and you've written for CT as well. My former Linux Outlaws host asked me to say hello to you, Fabian Churchill.
Okay.
He's we used to do a podcast together, and he's at CT.
Fabian, right?
Yeah. So tell us quickly about some of the other stuff you do. Where can people find, you know, what you're up to and read your work and so on?
Well, I currently contribute mostly to Linux Magazine, so there is a lot of stuff that I write is available on Linux Magazine's website. And I maintained a blog there called Productivity Source. It's about open source productivity software. And Scribbles and Snaps, that's my personal blog, where I blog about pretty much everything, but mostly about open source photography software and Digicam, among other things. So this would be two places to read more about me or read my work.
Hey, speaking of that, we normally ask developers a couple of questions at the end of the show, but I have a feeling one of them is not going to be appropriate for you. But I do want to know, how do you edit? What text editor do you use?
I don't have a personal favorite. I use whatever I fancy at the moment. Right now, I'm using Atom from GitHub.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. And so what? No, that'll be a question that'll take way too long. I was going to say, what got you into writing? Because I know what got me into writing. It was an accidental process. But I think we're just about out of time. So I really want to thank you for coming on the show and talking about Digicam and probably inspiring me to change my whole relationship with my photo collection, because sounds like I'll be using this now instead of Aperture once that goes away. So I really appreciate you taking your time today to talk to us about Digicam.
Well, thank you for having me.
Very good, very good. That was Dmitry Popov. I hopefully pronounced that close to right. Talking to us about Digicam. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, really interesting. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I haven't used Digicam in at least 5 years with a vengeance. Anyway, I've only kind of looked at it briefly, but it looks like I've missed out. It's probably developed quite a lot in that time, so I need to get back onto it and find out more. It's really exciting sounding stuff.
Yeah, very, very cool. And I was not expecting it to be this full-featured, so I was figuring it was some little not toy, what am I saying? But I just slammed every open-source project I've ever talked to. I'm so sorry. It's morning. This new 8 o'clock slot is killing me sometimes. Anyway.
It is early.
Speaking of guests that may no longer want to be on our show... Next week is OSCON, the big show in Portland for the last time. Actually, it's moving to Austin next year. And I will be there. I think Simon Phipps is also going to be there. But somehow we are going to get a live breaking story for Wednesday morning. We are live from there. If we don't get a breaking story, it's probably just going to be Simon and me sitting around wondering what we should have done to get a breaking story. But anyway, we will be on the air. We just don't know what we're doing yet. That may be more evident today than ever. The week after that, we have Talkie, which is a video chat and screen sharing software. And in fact, I'm going to be on a Talkie interview in about another hour, which is sort of amazing. I'll get to that a little more slightly later in the show here. Just added a bunch of new guests. Boy, I've been busy. We added, we were trying to get Harlan Stan on for a while. He's sort of single-handedly maintaining all the software that's used for the network time protocol, which you may know as NTP. And I think you want to bring him on, talk about how that all came about, talk about his current work with that, and maybe get some solicitation for help, because I know that he's been at least once or twice said, you know, I can't do this all myself. And so maybe we'll give him a bump here to try to get that to happen. Also just added, Google's cluster management software called Kubernetes. I hope that's pronouncing that correctly as well. Kubernetes which is they actually invited themselves on because we had just done this thing with Docker and Weave, and it's sort of, so we'll have them discuss the difference between Kubernetes and Weave, but Google's behind this. It's pretty amazing. Also just added to the show, I don't even know how to pronounce this, and it's probably a way to pronounce this that is not safe for error, but it's FWKNOP, which is the next generation port knocking software. It uses what's called single packet authorization, which is a much more secure way of doing port knocking. So I'm looking forward to that as well, even though I've been discouraging port knocking for quite a while. It's still, we can get into that actually in the show. Gambas, still on the schedule until they cancel later today. No, still on the schedule. Free object-oriented BASIC inspired by Visual Basic. Ichinga, I think that's how you pronounce it. It's a fork of Nagios. We're going to talk about scalable and extensible monitoring systems. Some of you are probably familiar with Nagios, might not be as familiar with Ichinga. And I'm really excited about this. Dart, Casper Lund, the head of the Dart project, and Anders Sandholm, who's one of the community coordinators, I believe that was his title, is going to come on and give us a big update about Dart. That's the short list. If you go to twit.tv/floss, you'll see those names and more. And if you have a project that's not on that list, please have them email me, the project leader or the community coordinator. Email me, merlin@stonehenge.com, and we will add them. That's how all these people got on the list, except for OSCON, because I go to OSCON. We do have a live stream. We do take questions from the stream. Not so many this time, but it's all good. So that's at 8 a.m. Pacific time. Wednesdays at live.twit.tv, and you can ask questions there, and they will be brought on to the show. You can follow us on Floss Weekly at Google Plus, and also at Floss Weekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter, but more likely you'll see my original stuff at Google Plus, Randall L. Schwartz there. I was a guest yesterday in the really, really warm afternoon in my apartment on the Decentralized.fm podcast, and that's all about Bitcoin and about decentralization in general, but mostly about Bitcoin and Bitcoin protocol. That show will be going live on Friday, they tell me. So that's decentralized.fm, and there's a bunch of other ways to get it too. They also distribute their podcast in BitTorrent, which I thought was kind of cool. So, it's a new way to get your stuff out there, I guess. I will be a guest in about an hour on the KluCon podcast. That's a convention group get together for voice over IP and free switch and things like that. So I will be on that one. I was at Fizzly just last week. I'm still jet lagged from it. I did do the brief introduction to Dart talk. It is up on SlideShare, or if you go to my Google Plus and search for a brief introduction to Dart. It was well received. Got some people really excited about Dart there, so that was really fun. Again, I'm going to be at OSCON next week. So look for me there. Come up and say, hey, I'm a Floss Weekly listener. Or if you still remember my Perl books, come up and say, hey, I really appreciated those Perl books. That's also going to be good. That's all I'm plugging today. What do you want to plug, Dan?
I want to mention the fact that I'm going to start blogging again with a vengeance. I've started a new job recently, and it's been really good. So I've been getting more into technical stuff that I want to blog about. You mentioned before, have the project leader email me and all that kind of stuff. There's a couple of projects that I'm going to get in touch with and ask them to do that. Zero Tier I've been playing with for VPNs, and also Sync Thing as well. And I'm going to try and get them on and talk about some stuff maybe in future. Maybe I'll contact them and see if we can get them. That would be cool. In the meantime, you can always get in touch or see what I'm up to by going to danlynch.org. Find me on Twitter. The name's @MethodDan. Or just go on the website and find stuff on there. So I will try and hunt down some more projects for us soon.
And hopefully in the next 5 weeks, because we've got a couple open slots still coming up real soon now. And I keep seeing those question marks going, oh, no, we got to get a full schedule. Must have a full schedule. Anyway, Dan, thank you for joining me today and speaking a lot about DigiCam that I wasn't aware of, including all sorts of intricacies of KDE.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime you want to talk about Linux libraries, give me a call.
Absolutely. Good to be here. Great. Thanks, Dan. We'll see you again next time on Floss Weekly.